Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Brought to you by Baptist Health and by Everbank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now. Right now.
And welcome into Jaguars Thursday. Jeff Loggeman alongside Tony Baselli. J.P. Shadrick is... I have no idea. He's somewhere that's not here. He's got the week off. And good for him. He's probably immersing himself in the March Madness of basketball, like Tony, like you were doing just not long ago. We were just talking about that. I mean, I remember growing up in high school, college, March Madness was it. I mean, it was a big deal. I don't follow college basketball that much anymore. I probably will once it gets down to eight, you know, and then go from there. But, I mean, for the whole 64.
I mean, I'll watch it. It'll be on the TV, I'm sure, at the house. My boys will probably watch it, and I'll sit down and watch a little bit of it. But I honestly did not watch one college basketball game from start to finish this year.
And I watched piece of one. I watched a little bit of Virginia, North Carolina.
No, that's not true.
My Cavaliers have a pretty good chance.
Good. I went to a Duke game this year.
Team.
On a visit with my son, we went to a Duke basketball game. So I
that's
saw
a
one.
Cool place, Cameron Indoor. But, man, that is a great place to see a basketball game. I
so
remember
that was fun.
I took a visit to Duke. Believe it or not, I a football official visit. I went to Duke. I mean, the only reason I went there, I don't know if you might be a little bit too young for this, but the two-time – NCAA Defensive Player of the Year, Billy King, who eventually became the general manager, Joe, of the Philadelphia 76ers. You probably know him very well. He went to my high school.
Yep.
And he played under Mike Krzyzewski at Duke. And so when I was trying to figure out where I wanted to go visit, I pretty much knew I was going to go to Virginia because my brother was already there. So I was like, well, where can I go to have a cool time? Well, I wanted to go to Duke, see Billy. You know, we were high school buddies. And got a chance to watch a Duke basketball game in person, and that is something special.
It was a great experience. But with all that said, I used to be a March Madness, fill out brackets. I've been filled out a bracket for 2 years now, and the only basketball I've watched is in Dan Edwards' office as I was waiting to get ready for the show tonight. And I'll probably watch a little bit. I'm like you. It gets to the 16s and 8s and
casual
the Final Four.
Fan.
Yeah, it's nothing. It's great drama and some great upsets, but – whatever reason, it's not doesn't have the same pull on me as it once did.
No, and it's amazing to me that the free agency and the NFL news that's going on right now during March Madness. I don't want to say it's better than March Madness, but I mean it for a lot of people, that's on the same par. I mean the NFL news. It seems that it never quits. You know, the NFL owners' meetings is next week. There's a laundry list of things that are on there. Talking point sheet.
9-point play.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about some of the proposed rule changes here at some point during this show, but there's a lot of rule changes that the competition committee has put forth and a lot of teams that have put out individual proposals. Will they pass? And I'm going to run basically through the laundry list and we'll get our opinion on it of whether, you know, don't waste your time or maybe consider it, you know, maybe experiment with it in the preseason, but we'll talk about that. But the news of the day for the Jaguars is that they claimed running back Bernard Pierce off of waivers from the Baltimore Ravens. Late Tuesday night, early Wednesday morning, he was arrested in Baltimore, on the outskirts of Baltimore, was pulled over doing 55 in a 30-mile-per-hour zone and was subsequently arrested for a DUI. The Ravens, even though that they kind of had a little bit of a snafu with Ray Rice, have had a zero-tolerance policy, it seems like, since then and a little bit before then for guys that were of marginal character. Well, Bernard Pierce was cut. The Jaguars claimed him. He's going into his fourth year. What do you think about him?
Well, he's under the new drug policy of and personal conduct policy of the NFL. If he's convicted of a DUI, and he'll get his day in court, but reading the report, it sounds like he's going to be. He's going to be suspended for 2 games by the NFL. So if he makes the team, he would only be available for 14 of the 16 games. Listen.
Doesn't cost a
I don't
lot
think
of money.
I don't think, you know, I don't think any of us think DUIs are all right and think it's, you know, good that that happened. But at the same time,
it's a position of need.
It's a position of need, and I'm fine giving a guy a second chance.
Well, and I'm okay with giving a guy a second chance, too. But, you know, it's kind of interesting in that that's a position that General Manager Dave Caldwell talked about earlier this week. There was a conference call with all of Jaguars season ticket holders, and this is one of the benefits that if you are a Jaguars season ticket holder, that you will have multiple conferences like this throughout the year. And we pulled some quotes from that, and here's Dave Caldwell, General Manager Dave Caldwell, talking about the running back position and also DeMarco Murray.
I don't think it was ever very close. You know, we weren't really getting involved in it. That was never our plan going into free agency. And as the longer he stayed out there, the longer his people kind of recruited us, so to speak. And,
gotcha.
So we just kind of sat back and kind of laid in the weeds for a while. And then about Monday mid-afternoon, it didn't look like a deal was going to get done in Dallas. So we said, hey, let's take a shot that something makes sense for us. And if it doesn't make sense for us, it was never in our plans anyways.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's a good player, and he got a terrific deal in Philadelphia. I wish him all the best. But not that we didn't want a player. But, you know, running back's a tricky situation. And when you have a lot of needs, I always felt like this, that as we build this, that would be the last piece we would add.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're really ready to make our run and we feel like it could happen sooner or later, maybe it will happen, you know, sooner or later, but we'll start to invest in running backs when we get all of our other positions solidified.
I thought that was an excellent point that he revealed about the philosophy of building a football team and the running back position. And that he talks about how that's the last position that you really want to address, because, I mean, most guys that come out of college from the running back position can come in and contribute right away. And so for Dave to say that, first of all, I thought it was very revealing, but it also goes to the point of that's a position that you feel like that you can address quickly. And then because the window for a running back is so small,
that's the biggest thing right there,
that you want to address that position to where you can have the running back hitting on all cylinders in the prime of his career, which is very early in his career. I thought that was good stuff by Dave.
Well, I think it's accurate, and I like the fact that they had the discipline, the budgetary discipline, to say, well, I mean, if we can get DeMarco Murray for this price, whatever it was, then you take him, even though was not in our initial free agency plans, but you get him at a deal that you think works for the team, and you get a high-quality player. I was always worried about it. I'd have been fine with it if they signed him. But he had 500 touches last year, including receptions, carries,
playoffs. That's a lot of miles.
That's a lot of miles. You look historically what happens when players get that many touches. There's usually a drop-off. Now, the counter to that is he had not had a lot of touches before last year as a Cowboy. But it makes you scratch your head. And the Cowboys were sitting there saying, you know, we're going to be careful as well.
Well, they had to because of their cap situation.
Yep.
But, you know, there's very few running backs that are a Marcus Allen that can play well in their late 20s and early 30s like Marcus Allen did for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Remember, he had 2 years off, though, as a Raider because Al Davis hated him so much and refused to play him.
Yeah. But does Bernard Pierce help that? The one thing that I will say about the claiming of Bernard Pierce, it's not a quick fix. But what it
does, he's a good player, though.
It makes the position
solid.
Competitive. And, you know, any time that you can make a position competitive, then I think that you could make those components better within that position group. I mean, because he's not a walk-in-the-door starter.
No, but he's a guy who's had success and has been productive for Baltimore when he shared time, and he was the backup to Ray Rice. Solid guy. He rushed for almost 600 yards as a backup the year they won the Super Bowl
in
2012.
That was 12, and he had 108 carries, 532 yards, nearly 5 yards a carry. That was his best year as a pro. And then, of course, last year, the emergence of Justin Forsett, where that came from, I don't know, because we didn't see that in Jacksonville. But a good component to add to make a position more competitive. And you know what? Who knows? I mean, maybe you go into the draft, and we just heard Dave Caldwell talking about, like, the running back being the last position that you address when you're team building. We're going to find out if all of a sudden he goes out and drafts a running back in round two, does he think that they're getting close to the point where they're ready to roll?
Well, I'll be shocked if they don't draft a running back between rounds 3 and 5. 2 might be a little bit early, but I think you'll see some young legs coming to compete in that backfield. I would just be surprised if they did not do that, especially as deep as the running back position is for this college draft coming up.
Well, I think one thing is for certain by making a run at DeMarco Murray. And from what I understand, the run was a little bit more serious than Dave Caldwell indicated to the season ticket holders there, because obviously you want to downplay it a little bit since it didn't happen. But I think that the run was more serious than what Dave played it up to be. I give him credit for having the discipline to not get carried away and to try to get into a bidding war with the Philadelphia Eagles, who were clearly willing to give him a lot more guaranteed money. I mean, it's like Dave said, I mean, that's the last position that you want to add to your football team when you're team building. So credit to them for having a little discipline. And I wonder, is that maybe some influence? Is that Dave's philosophy? Or did the presence of John Idzik and Tim Walsh working together now, did that help?
Well, I'm sure it helped from a number standpoint, but I think Dave is a pretty disciplined guy. If you look at how he's built this team from the start, he's convicted of how to do it. I mean, I think a lot of guys would have come in with the cap situation as it was that Jacksonville had from day one and would have been very tempted just to try to start signing guys and build this quickly. And Dave's been disciplined from the start, building through the draft, patient in free agency. The first 2 years really kind of getting tier two guys. As when I say tier two, not that they're not good players, but after the first wave, the second wave of free agent players, and knew that this was the year that he would do it. And even when he was on the show with us, Jeff, it was two weeks ago.
Yeah, right before the opening of free agency.
He was very clear that they have numbers and they have a budget, and they're not going to chase, and they're not going to pay more than they think they should for certain guys. And I think, you know, is that influence? I'm sure it's influenced all the way from Shad Khan all the way down to, you know, Tim Walsh and John Idzik and everyone else. And I'm sure, you know, Gus has his feelings in there. But ultimately, it's Dave's call, and Dave is the one who's going to make that decision. And I think he's done a good job of being disciplined and making those choices and not going overboard, which is so easy to do when you have the cap space that the Jaguars do.
When you got money falling out of your pockets.
You got
pockets.
A lot of opportunities.
And again, that quote or that little piece from Dave Caldwell was played through a phone conference with season ticket holders. And folks, if for season tickets, single game tickets, or to learn more about being a Jaguars 365 member, call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. And that Jaguars 365 member is all about that stuff. And, you know, he also talked with J.P. Shadrick about Luke Jokel. And, Tony, I want to get your thoughts on this, because Luke Jokel is certainly an interesting topic of conversation, because a lot of fans, I don't want to say have given up on Luke Jokel, but are highly disappointed in Luke
Very
Jokel.
Critical.
And I'm like, look, let this young man grow up a little bit. And Dave's got an interesting piece here in his comments about Luke Jokel.
Well, I think Luke is a perfect example of a player that's learning the speed of the game, but really can have a year where, I mean, he looks great now. If you look at him now, he's really changing his body.
Really?
He's maturing a little bit. And what a lot of people don't realize is Luke should be going into his rookie year right now. He came out as a true junior, so wow. He bypassed his fourth and his fifth year in college, which a lot of these guys are coming out right now. So we knew when we took him that he wasn't going to be coming right away and be a Pro Bowler, but had the work ethic, the intelligence, and the drive to improve his game and do whatever he needed to do. So going into maybe year three, year four, year five, you're going to see a really good player in Luke Jokel.
And he says he has the work ethic, the drive, and the intelligence to improve. And I would have added one thing there. He's got the feet. He's got the feet. And you got to have the feet to be able to play left tackle. But it's interesting because, you know what, I think a lot of people forget that Luke Jokel came out as a true junior and that he should be coming out in this 2015 draft that starts on April 30th.
I've said it all along. I mean, did Luke play great last year? No. Did he have struggles? Was it up and down? Was there inconsistency? Sure. But I've never changed my position. I think Luke Jokel is going to be a good football player. I think he has the things, and this is going to sound like a broken record to people who listen to the show. He has the things you can't teach. He has great feet. He has good hips.
He's got a demeanor.
He has toughness. He wants to be good. He's intelligent. I mean, he has all the things. You can teach somebody how to use their hands better. Luke didn't do a good job using his hands last year. Gets him outside. Easy correction. You can teach a guy how to be more patient with his feet and set. You can't teach a guy how to get better feet.
Yeah.
You can teach a guy how to use them, though. You can teach a guy how to, you know, sit down a little bit and be more patient on the bull rush or, you know, speed to bull. I mean, those are all things that Luke struggled with at times last year, but he has the ability to do it. I mean, just listen to Dave. I remember as a sophomore, my third year, actually I was a redshirt sophomore, and so it was my third year, there was a brief moment I thought about leaving. And could I have come and played in the NFL? Absolutely. Would I have been the same player I was my rookie year after going, because I ended up going back two more years because I got hurt my junior year. Would I have been the same player? Not even close. I was so much more mature. I was so much stronger. I had an extra 15 pounds of weight.
Which Luke could use that.
I mean, Luke could use it. And yeah. So the difference from being 2021 when I would have come out my third year if I would have decided to do it, or 23, that is a huge difference. Luke Jokel will be fine. I laugh when I hear people, so we go draft another left tackle. No. I've had some people say we should move Luke Jokel inside and go get – I'm like, you guys are crazy. Luke Jokel is a left tackle in this league because he can move his feet. He'll be fine. Not even – he. When I think about the concerns I have for this team
– he's not one
even immediately after the season, as tough as the season was at times for Luke, not once did he cross my mind as, well, gosh, we have issues at left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all correctable. Now, if I watched a guy who couldn't bend his knees and couldn't move his feet, I remember the Jason Smith, the kid that the Rams took
drafted in the first round.
4 years ago, second overall pick out of Baylor. I watched one football game of his.
You said,
and
no
I said,
way.
He can't play.
Because he can't bend his knees.
Can't bend his knees, can't move his feet. And I don't care how much work you did with him. I don't care how much time he took. I don't care what you did in the weight room. You could have, you know, got Anthony Munoz to go, you know, coach him. It wasn't going to change. He could not play left tackle in this league.
Mm-hmm.
And how the Rams didn't see that when they met him.
That was a major mess.
Oh. But unbelievable.
I've gotten this question asked of me before. When it comes to the conversation, you know, Jaguar fans, when it comes to Luke Jokel, and they ask me, has Tony Boselli ever, you know, sat down and worked with Luke Jokel? Now, look, I know that the Jaguars got a very respected offensive line coach, and Doug Marrone, former head coach of the Buffalo Bills, and now the Jaguars offensive line coach and assistant head coach, I think is his title. Very respected offensive line coach. But have you ever thought about working with a Luke Jokel to help him?
Listen, Luke and I have had several conversations during the season, off season, about technique and how to do things and everything else. Have we ever gone on a field and worked on stuff? No. If Luke wanted to, I would absolutely. He has always been so respectful to me and very inquisitive and wants to know. He is a guy who's hungry. He has great coaches here. I mean, Doug Marrone's going to be able to teach him and stuff. And the stuff anything I could give Luke Jokel that Doug Marrone can't is maybe the inside of what the mindset of thinking and, you know,
in game playing an opponent,
yeah, in game stuff. I mean, and Doug can do that. I mean, he played the game as well. Could I give a little bit of a different vantage point from the left tackle position? Sure. Technique wise, Luke and I have had great conversation. That's what I love about the kid. He wants to be good. He asks questions. We have a great relationship. If he ever wanted to go on the field and felt like he needed some extra stuff, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
You better check the rules first.
Yeah, I don't know if I can. I mean, I think there is against because being an employee.
You're getting paid by the Jaguars to be on that microphone.
I don't think they'd let me. It would have to be – that's a good point. I don't know when we could even do it. But would I help them? Absolutely. But Doug Marrone and Luke Buck is – I mean, those guys are good coaches. They know the game, and he's getting coached well. And he'll be fine.
Well, the reason I asked that is that, you know, you're at the Senior Bowl. You did a little coaching at the Senior Bowl. I mean, why not?
Oh, I'd help. I mean, you know, if it wasn't against the rules and there was a way to do it, I would help all those guys. I mean, because I love to, we talk about it. I love coaching football. I love talking. I love the intricacies of offensive line play because I think it's, you know, that and probably corner are the positions where you're at a – physical disadvantage because what you're asked to do in reaction to
it's crazy.
Those are very two difficult positions to play. And so technique is so important in those positions that I love digging into it and teaching that kind of stuff. And I'm always, you know, when Luke and I talk, he's always great about it. And all those guys, Austin Pazdor, you know, Luke Buenco and Brandon Leonard, two young guys that are very hungry to learn.
Hungry to learn.
Yeah, and so and
that's
I,
that's, a, that's
it's a trait, great position.
It's a trait you got to have.
That's right.
Especially at that position. All right, folks, Republic Services is the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida. They're the official waste provider of the Jaguars and have been proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all of your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here. More with Jaguars Thursday right after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Join John Osher and J.P. Shadrick for Jaguars.com Live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. They'll have special guests keep you informed with the latest Jaguars news and take your social media questions. Jaguars.com Live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. on Jaguars.com. And also, a kind of a special feature. It's Jaguars.com Live coming up next week on Monday and Tuesday, where they will be live from the NFL owners meeting, which is going to be in, I believe it's Phoenix, Arizona. There's going to be a number of things on the table.
Go through some of those rules.
Are you ready?
Yeah, go through. I mean, because I only read one of them, and it's the most idiotic thing I've ever heard.
There's some of them here. I'll just quick comment. I'll read the rule, and you quick comment, yeah or nay.
We'll talk about it.
Okay. Allow any call to be challenged.
Nay. Okay. Makes the game too long. It's already long enough.
Allow penalties to be challenged.
No, because they're judgment calls and it would be even a bigger disaster.
I totally agree. Allow coaches to challenge personal fouls. Again, that's a judgment call.
The only thing I would say there, I think the NFL should do away with the officials calling helmet-to-helmet contact on the field, and that should be a post-game play that is reviewed and fined by the league.
Okay, well, further down here, they're talking about allow replay review of rulings related to hits on defenseless receivers. Yes,
I would do that.
Because that's
I would actually just take it's too hard for the officials, and I'd actually just take it out of the game and let them review it after the game and have big fines for it.
Okay, and I also got the thing of personal fouls to be reviewed or any foul that would result in an automatic first down to be reviewable.
Yeah, but some of those it's hard because, you know, some of the automatic first downs are, you know, a face mask or, you know, a fight breaks out, you know, whatever. So just the helmet ones, those are bang-bang plays that are so hard for the officials. Yes. I don't even blame the officials.
But the judgment calls, though, no.
No, you're not going to start reviewing. So you can review a play.
With defensive.
So I throw a flag and say, Baselli held, the left tackle held. Then I can go back and look at it. I mean, who did – I mean – it's too
a hit on a defensive receiver is so fast, and you're trying to determine
so hard
whether the hit was the shoulder or the neck. That should
And I think in that rule it should be stated that if the receiver, the offensive player, lowers his head at contact, and the target of the defensive player is deemed to be below the neck area before the offensive player drops, it's not a penalty.
I agree with you. Here's another one. Increase the number of coaches' challenges from 2 to 3.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Some things on game clock. Forget that. I'm not going to go over that. This was the New England Patriots' suggestion. Put fixed cameras on all boundaries of the playing field, sidelines and goal lines.
Oh, I thought they wanted fixed cameras at everyone's practices so they could watch them. Or maybe they could deflate the balls.
Maybe. Or at least they did. Yeah. I like that idea.
I do too. I mean, because a lot of times, because
the cameras aren't costly, just go ahead and use them.
Even if they are, I think we can afford them.
The NFL can afford the cameras.
So, because here's the thing: a lot of the times, the sixth, seventh, eighth game, which we haven't been very good, so we've been a part of those games.
That's right.
Have limited cameras, so you have limited angles, so the replay officials are at a disadvantage to be able to call certain things.
Okay, I agree with that. I think this that's good stuff. I mean, it kind of standardizes. Every game's the same. Exactly. You can have the same looks on, inbounds, out of bounds, or whatever. I like that. How about this? The Indianapolis Colts came up with this, and it's talking about allowing a bonus try after a two-point conversion.
Jeff, this is Jim Irsay who came up with this, the owner.
Well, and it does not surprise me. And it's actually kind of interesting because this is the first proposed rule change that actually would change the scoring in the National Football League.
Since the two-point conversion.
Forever.
Since
the two-point conversion. Now, what he's proposing is that if a team goes for two and they make it, then they would be allowed a bonus play to where they would back the team up and allow them to try a 50-yard field goal. I think that's exactly what he was talking
about. That's exactly right.
So you could end up having a 9-point play. So a touchdown, a two-point conversion that is good – and then have the option. Well, you wouldn't even have the option. You would automatically choose it to have the bonus point to make it an actually a 9-point play.
And then you have to jump through a fire loop, fire lit, gas lace, fire lit hoop. And if you went through there without burning yourself, you got another point. I mean, come on. I mean, really? I mean, it's too gimmicky. Just play the game.
I agree. You don't change what has been in football forever.
That changed the entire fabric of how
it's
the strategy,
6 points,
everything.
1 point, and then it's two. And then it's three for a field goal.
That's
leave it.
It
alone.
I mean, what's next? It's.
I wonder when Jim Irsay made that suggestion. Was it pre-rehab or post-rehab? It's just me thinking out loud.
It's a thought.
How about this? Guarantee both teams a possession in overtime, because now the rule is if you score a touchdown, the game is over. If you score a field goal, the other team is allowed a possession.
Here's the easiest rule change. It's so common sense. Overtime. Flip the coin. Whoever wins it receives it. You kick it to them. They go score or not score. If they say they score a touchdown, they kick off the other team and they get a chance to tie. If they tie the game, it goes sudden death at that point. Everyone gets a chance to have the ball. What's so hard about that?
You like that?
Yes.
Okay. I'd be okay with that.
I mean,
I like the rule, though. I like the fact that they changed it to where back in the old days,
closer.
If you won the toss and you kicked a field goal, the game was over.
That was ridiculous.
To me, that didn't seem fair because it made too much on a coin flip.
It made everything the coin flip.
So I would be okay with allowing each team a possession. But at least the rule that's currently in place now that you have to score a touchdown for the game
it
to be over,
closer.
It's better than what it was.
It's much better, but let's just take the final step. It's not that hard. Everyone gets the ball once.
I'm with you. All right, so we both say yay to that. Ban peel back blocks by any offensive player.
I disagree with that 100%. So if a guy who runs the running back runs 4-5, and the corner from the other side of the field runs 4-3 and is going to chase him down to score a touchdown, but me as an offensive lineman is in a position where he can't see me and I can peel back and knock him out before he can make the tackle on a touchdown, why should that be illegal?
Well, I think the league is okay with blocking a guy in that position, but not hammering him.
Why not?
Well,
hammer him. That's part of the game.
Safety.
Oh,
safety. Well, I mean,
it's too much, Jeff.
It's what it is.
Peel backs are fine.
Well, and a part of the safety, they also have the proposal, and I'm in agreement with this, and that you give defensive players the defenseless receiver, okay, designation, protection on interception. So, in other words, when they become the offensive player, they now become a defenseless receiver. So, in other words, if the guy's going up and he's making an interception, an offensive guy can't hammer him.
I disagree with that, too. I don't even like the defenseless receiver.
Well,
Knock him out.
I'm okay with that.
I mean, the only thing I'm in agreement with that makes the game safer, no helmet-to-helmet contact.
Okay.
And guess what? You can review that afterwards. And if guys are going leading with the crown of their head, of their helmet, then you fine the heck out of him. Fine as much money, because that has no place in the game. It's dangerous for the guy delivering the blow and a guy who receives the blow. But guess what? If you throw if you're a quarterback and you throw a guy over the middle of the field and you lay him out and he gets hit in the ribs, that's not the defensive player. That's playing good football.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like any of those rules.
Okay. All right, here's a couple other ones. Linebackers to wear jersey numbers 40-49, Brian Bosworth wanted this years ago. It's fine because there's so many offensive linemen, linebackers,
yeah,
defensive
fine.
Ends that are wearing 50s now.
Yeah, it's fine.
Big deal. This is in reaction to the New England Patriots last year. If an eligible player reports as an ineligible receiver to the referee, he must line within the tackle box. So, in other words, if you got an 80s number and you're ineligible, you need to line up in the tackle box. So what they're trying to do is stop the
trick them. Trick and play.
The New England Patriots last year from doing all these crazy formations, and then the defense trying to figure out, okay, the numbers are all messed up. Who's eligible and who's not? I like that.
I actually thought they fixed it when they basically stopped it and announced who the ineligible was, so you gave the defense a chance. Because you know it's in the Super Bowl.
But see, the problem is they were going so fast with it.
I know, but they stopped it.
In the Super Bowl.
They tried to do the same thing, and the official stopped it, announced it, and the Seahawks had no issue with covering up the right guys.
Okay. Eliminate the 75 player cut down. The roster cut down goes from 90 to 75 and then 53. There talks maybe about eliminating the 75 player step. I don't like that because a lot of players that get cut from the 90 to 75 now have time to catch on with another team.
Yeah, but Jeff, most of those guys that get cut from 90 to 75 aren't going to play.
No, but there's a lot of aging veterans that still have play left in them, and it's obvious that they're not going to make it once the team's got a chance to look at some of the number of players. Any opportunity that would take away a job opportunity to me. In fact, I think they should go from 90 to 70 to 53 or to 68 to make it.
I don't, because those last 2 weeks of practice or last 10 days of practice from that, as a guy, and I think you, if you think about it this way, you'd be the same way, as a guy who's a starter getting ready to play 16 games, I want more guys in camp, so I take less reps during that time.
All right,
so I'm healthier for the regular season.
That's enough for the rules. How about that? We'll take a break here on Jaguars Thursday. Jeff Loggeman, Tony Vaselli. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some former Jaguars that may or have landed in other places. In fact, one of them specifically landed in the division. We'll do that right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Prime Sport is the leading global sports travel and event management company, offering corporate and fan travel packages and hospitality events for corporations, professional sports teams, and fans. For more information, visit PrimeSport.com. Prime Sport is the official sponsor of the 2015 Jaguars offseason, which, by the way, is scheduled to start, I believe it is April 26th for this football team. And then for teams that have a new head coach, I think it is April 12th. That's off the top of my head if I got those dates
wrong.
It's
when the workout days start?
Yeah.
You can't work out until April 26th?
No. Well, the OTAs.
OTAs. Oh, yeah. But they can start coming back to work out like April 1st.
Correct.
I think it is.
A couple news items from some former Jaguars. Cecil Short signed a deal with the Houston Texans. Did you read his tweet, his letter?
I did not.
I thought this was so classy. He tweeted this out, and I'm a big Cecil Shorts fan. I know you are.
Oh, yeah.
We love Cecil. He's had a very difficult time staying healthy, but class guy. And he said this: I want to thank the Jaguars organization and express how much love and respect I have for Mr. Khan, Dave Caldwell, Coach Bradley, and most importantly, the incredible fans. The wonderful people in the Jacksonville community have embraced my family and treated us like family since the day I arrived, and I appreciate everything you have done for us over the past 4 years. It has been an honor to be a Jaguar. Thank you. Cecil Shorts III.
You know, if he can stay healthy, I think Houston gets a good player. Probably, you know, I think Cecil's a good two, a great three in this league. He's, you know.
When healthy.
His problem is he couldn't stay healthy the last couple of years, and I hate it for him because he's a tough guy. He wanted to be out there, just couldn't do it, and his body just wouldn't hold up.
You could almost say that in an offseason sometimes that he overtrained.
Oh, he worked so hard.
I mean, too hard, so
and
I think.
And he's such a good guy.
I think with the hard part is with athletes a lot of times is that you have to find the right way to train, and Cecil just wanted to get better all the time to where he just didn't quit.
You can overtrain.
And the soft tissue injuries, that's mostly what he had besides the head issue. But the soft tissue injuries are what hampered him from being able to contribute on game day on a consistent basis for the Jaguars. And I think that was a direct result of Cecil not quite understanding how to train in the offseason to make sure that your body is ready to peak when it gets to September.
And hopefully he figures out. I hope he stays healthy. Listen, I hope for 14 weeks a year he does a great job and plays great. And has down weeks when he plays the Jaguars those two times. But I don't know anybody in this organization or anybody in this town who has anything negative to say about Cecil Shorts. He handled himself like a pro. He came to work. He worked hard. He gave it his best. And if he could have been healthy, I think he'd still be here.
And he still should have caught that ball in Houston.
Well, that too. But that's all right. We'll let that go.
But Cecil, that's okay. Other Jaguar, Alan Ball, it was reported that he signed a deal with the Carolina Panthers, but that has not happened yet. It was a little bit, I think, of the cart before the horse type of a deal with some reporting that was going on. But Alan Ball, it is expected that he could sign a deal with the Carolina Panthers. Another classy guy, a true pro, good football player. I was hoping that the Jaguars would find a way to keep him.
Yeah, I don't know if surprised is the right word, but I think he would have, you know, I think he would have been a good person to have back because he's a veteran. He would add a lot of competition. He's a good football player. And he played good football here. He got hurt last year and missed half the season. But I guess I'm a little bit surprised that the Jaguars didn't make a – and maybe they did. Maybe he just got more money in Carolina or is going to. But another good guy. Handled himself the right way.
What would be wrong with having too many cornerbacks?
There's never a problem having too many guys who can cover people.
Former Jaguar Rasheen Mathis signed a 2-year, $3.5 million contract. He's getting ready to be, did I get this right, Joe, 35 years old in August?
Not a lot of 35-year-old corners out there.
Going into his 13th year, but, you know, you and I both watched Rasheen some last year, and since he left here from the ACL tear and then he went to Detroit, he's been a very good football player. I think he started every game last year for the Detroit Lions. There's very few freaks that can play the cornerback position for a very long time. Darrell Green did it with the Washington Redskins. But Rasheen Mathis looks like he could be one of those guys.
You know, Darrell Green was a guy who could run 4-4. I mean, he literally on his 50th birthday went out and ran 4-4. So Darrell Green could always run. And I think that's why he was able to play, 18, 19 years, whatever
long
it was.
Long time.
Rasheen Mathis can't run.
Not like
that. Once he did.
But he's got great ball skills.
In the right system, where you can play cover two, some zone stuff, other zone coverages. He's a good tackler. He's really, really smart, and he has great ball skills like you talked about. Veteran presence, I think it fits. Here, where they want to play a lot of man, cover three, where
press.
The corners press, have to run with guys, this system wouldn't fit him.
Not
where,
now. When he was young?
Yeah, when he was young.
He could fit in any system.
Absolutely. At this point of his career, I think the system they run at Detroit fits him better.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. John in Keystone Heights wants to talk a little Tony Boselli. Good evening, John.
Hey, Tony.
Yeah.
You're coming out to my country tomorrow. I mean, Saturday night, right?
Yeah, Saturday night. I'll be out there at Penny Farms talking. Yep. And
John, what do you got going on out there?
It's a gala. It's a benefit. It's $75 just to see Tony. That's cheap. See Tony.
$75 bucks to listen to him when you can do it every Thursday night?
Well, I can do it Thursday night, but the other people don't.
I'll be a little more polite Saturday night, John.
I will be too. But the thing is also all day Saturday from 9 to 3, anybody that's considering going out to a retirement community, it's an open house to come out and see. There's people giving tours and everything else. It's all for a real good cause, a real good family-oriented community. It really is.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting out there and talking and sharing some things and meeting everybody and having a good meal. And it's going to be a great time.
There's some really good turkey hunting out there, by the way.
Yeah, Penny Farms.
Well, yeah.
Nice land out there.
We aren't having turkey.
Oh.
Jeff's going to come kill the turkey.
There's a lot
we'll
of big deer, too. There's a lot of big deer out there, too, Jeff.
Just saying, John.
Okay.
We'll send Jeff out there beforehand, and he can shoot a deer and kill a turkey, and that'll be dinner.
That's what we'll do, buddy. Glad to see that you're coming out there. That's a really good cause.
All right, John, I'll see you Saturday night. Make sure you come say hi.
I will.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You, John. John checking in from Keystone Heights. Big celebrity, $75 ahead.
Right.
You're getting expensive.
You know, I'm a big deal.
Let's take a break here on Jaguars Thursday. When we come back, we're going to take a 360-degree look around the National Football League. And believe it or not, some of the news actually contains the name Tebow. We'll do that right after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Hey, don't forget on Jaguars.com, it's live. That's Monday and Tuesday coming up from the NFL owners meeting, which actually starts on Sunday. But Jaguars.com will be there live starting at 1 p.m. on Monday and Tuesday, first part of next week. Following, obviously, the teams in the division that the Jaguars play in, the Indianapolis Colts making some noise, signing the older guys, Frank Gore, Andre Johnson. But the guy that I actually threw it out there a couple weeks ago, Vince Wilfork, and would you take a look at Vince Wilfork, signs with the Houston Texans. What a perfect fit And did you read Bill Belichick's statement about the departure of Vince Wilfork?
What did it say? I read Vince, what Vince said.
Well, first and
Vince
foremost,
just
Bill Belichick never has really anything good to say. He came out and released a statement on Vince Wilfork, said that, look, I mean, he's excellent from A to Z in every category. He's the greatest defensive lineman that I've ever coached. And I'm reading this and I'm going,
why didn't you resign him?
Did somebody else tell you, Bill, that you couldn't keep Vince Wilfork? Because if I remember correctly, the Patriots
have
cap space to be able to retain Vince Wilfork. So why would you let him walk when – if you watch the performance of Vince Wilfork down the stretch last year in the playoffs, he was one of their top two or three defensive players on game day.
He's a 15-play run-stop guy. And the only thing I think of in today's NFL where you're in sub more times than not, they just felt like they could use those dollars and try to go younger and get a guy who can rush the passer, because that's what he is. He's a 12 to 15 snap guy.
No, he's more than that now. I mean,
no, I was because he's not a sub guy. And I was talking to a defense coordinator in the NFL, and he said, "Really, everyone, your base package no longer is base. That you are in sub more times than not."
But here's the thing: when you have Vince Wilfork,
I agree with you. I would have signed him
field,
too.
No, but I'm saying when you go to sub, if you have Vince Wilfork on the field, he actually against a team that runs the ball very well from spread. Whoever that may be. Let's say it's the Indianapolis Colts and Frank Gore is rolling, and they got the wide receivers spread out all over the place. And when you've got a dominant presence that can play on the line of scrimmage, like a Vince Wilfork, it would almost allow you to have that sub package on the field because he's just such a powerful force in the middle. So I mean, he's more than a 15-play-a-game guy. I mean, for the Patriots, he was playing 30 plays a game. You know, so – I'm very surprised.
He's getting up there in age.
No question he's getting up there in age. But, I mean, the season that he had coming back from an Achilles tendon injury was simply amazing. But what a great acquisition for the Houston Texans. A lot of people wanted to compare Ed Reed going to the Houston Texans to this Vince Wilfork acquisition. To me, they're not even close, because Ed Reed started showing signs in Baltimore of tailing off, where Vince Wilfork is still playing at a high level.
Well, Vince will be perfect for that 3-4 defense they want to run there and just be a great two-gap nose.
Vince Wilfork and J.J. Watt. That's pretty scary now. This football team's going to have to block it. And I wonder what a very young center might be thinking about that here on this football team.
Well, good news is you know you can reach him.
You know, I don't know if you can now.
Yeah, you can reach him, but he's
gonna, so strong.
He's going to press you down the line, though, that's for sure.
All right,
I was a little bit surprised.
Now it's time to take a look around the NFL, a 360-degree look presented by 360 Access. Don't mess around when it comes to game time. The 360 Access team of experts is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to make sure you have the best experience for the biggest games of the year. Visit 360access.com to learn more. Dallas Cowboys signed Greg Hardy this week. Base salary is $750,000. Every game that he is available to play, he gets an extra $578,125.
So he's right, and they wrote it that way because no one knows what the suspension is going to be. Now, based on the judge's ruling on Adrian Peterson, and basically said the NFL cannot go back and fine him based on today's rules, because the rules were put in place after Greg Hardy had his issue with the domestic violence, what he ultimately was acquitted of, cleared of. Judge Dottie basically said,
well, wasn't acquitted. The witness did not show up.
They dropped the case.
The case was dismissed.
Okay, dropped the case. Whatever legal term you want to use. Judge Dottie came back and said the league cannot suspend Adrian Peterson any longer based on the new standards that the NFL has put in place with domestic violence. So there's precedent right there that the league is going to have a hard time of suspending Greg Hardy any more than they already have. But the Cowboys are basically saying, we're not sure. So if you play 16 games, you're going to make an extra $9 million, basically. So you'll make almost $10 million.
It's over $10
million. Over $10 million as your base salary, as your salary. If you're suspended half the year, you're going to make five. I mean, and just do the math from there on and out.
But I had to read that number because, I mean, you just think about it.
That's a smart deal.
$578,125 per game available.
Listen, Peyton Manning
made a lot of money.
He made more than that each game last year.
I mean, and that's like, I think the league minimum is about that for a lot of guys now. So he's making basically 1 year's salary for a guy coming in the league every week.
If you were Dave Caldwell, would you have made a run at Greg Hardy?
Yeah, that's a real tough one. I mean, he's a heck of a football player.
One of the best defensive linemen in football.
But the backlash, the public, you know, and Jerry Jones is, you know Jerry now. He made some strong comments about, you know, the domestic violence last year, and then all of a sudden he signs Greg Hardy. You know, what kind of a message is he sending?
So
in this market, no.
Let me ask you, I'm not sure why not in this market or any other market, but let me ask you this. Do you think, you, Jeff Loughlin, not the team, not the fans, do you think a guy deserves a second chance who has committed domestic violence?
Absolutely. I think anybody deserves a second chance. But here's the thing.
So if that's the case, why wouldn't you give him the second chance here when he's the best player?
I'm not paying somebody that deserves a second chance, you know, $15, $16 million or $12 million, whatever it costs.
Okay.
I'm not doing that.
If you got the same deal, instead of paying $581 a game, you had to pay him $600 a game with a $750 base salary, would you –
I'm all about giving guys second chances.
I'm asking you, would you – at least minimum. He's one of the best defensive players in the league.
But that's why I wouldn't have signed him.
Right.
Because I'm not going to pay a guy who has had issues like that kind of money. I'm just not going to do it.
See, I'll be honest with you. I am completely conflicted because I believe in giving guys a second chance. Domestic violence to me is one of the lowest things a man can do is lay his hands on a woman.
Totally.
I mean, it just makes me just
Well, would you pay him that kind of money?
But I
on
go
a second
back,
chance.
I believe in guys getting second. If a guy is truly sorrowful and has changed and has admitted the errors of his ways. And
do you see any indication that he's had any of that?
I didn't there because he obviously paid the girl off to show up. So I probably wouldn't have in this case because I'm not sure he's at that stage.
Right.
But, boy, it would be – from a pure football standpoint, Jeff, he makes you – a lot better.
No, there's no doubt.
Right away.
Now, he's a great football player. But lots of questions away from that fact.
I'll tell you, it makes you – those are when you find out really what your convictions are when it comes to issues like that. If a guy gets busted for marijuana or some substance abuse, is that okay? Do I think that's okay? No, but much more lenient in saying, okay, you made a mistake. Let's move on. Let's figure it out and get you the help you need. And, you know, you're valuable to this organization. Let's get you in the building. When it comes to domestic violence, you hit a woman? Boy, that's really hard for me. I wouldn't have signed him either. I wouldn't have gone after him.
And that story.
And I don't care what. And you listen
and
to
that's the, a strange
yeah,
story.
And now. You listen to the kind of the testimony and everything from the original trial, which the judge found him guilty. And in North Carolina, you have a right to appeal to a jury trial, which he did. Then, mysteriously, the witness disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to testify.
She had a lot of money and was seen in Chicago shopping.
She was on – yeah, so
– I believe is what –
so I don't care what I don't care what market I'm in. I would not have gone after him as well. But it's really hard from when you're just trying – when your job is to make a football team better, that's your job. Mm-hmm. And if he's allowed to play – that's a hard one not to go after because he's really, really good.
Well, and Jerry's situation in Dallas is that his job as general manager is to get that football team better, and he doesn't have to answer to anybody. He's the general manager, and he's the owner. And also, just a little side note on this, the NFL filed suit to obtain the information from the North Carolina Attorney General's office and then the Mecklenburg County courthouse, whatever it is, that so they filed suit. They want to get the information from that trial on Greg Hardy.
But I still say the NFL's in a tough position because the rules that they had in place when that happened, they really have.
But you know what? That's a reaction of the NFL doing that is because they didn't really they didn't, reached for the information in Ray Rice's case.
I get what they're doing. My recommendation to the NFL is, listen, we have a new policy. We regretfully did not have this policy in before. And so because of it, we cannot punish Greg Hardy based on a rule that was in place after whatever he did. I mean, because ultimately the charges were dropped. The female who was involved in it did not want to testify. And unless the NFL can prove that it was an illegal payoff, which I don't know how you have an illegal payoff.
You can't bribe. With the attorneys involved, I mean, the attorneys aren't going to let him get involved in an illegal
payoff.
So
it's a tough situation. It's a bad situation. It's unfortunate, but there's no place for a man ever laying their hands on
Well, you know Jerry now.
He wants to win.
He likes a story, and he likes
He's to, got one.
He's got a story now, and he's got to deal with the backlash. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Next week, same time, same place, and maybe we'll have J.P. Shadrick himself right here on Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.